So I want to introduce my guest, Bruce Cook. Bruce, welcome to the Core of the Matter.
Thank you, Steve. My pleasure.
Hey, listen, you told me you played hockey today.
I did.
Did your team win?
No, we came in second.
That's a wonderful thing about old timers hockey. Winning and losing is obviously you try, but not nearly. It's not at all costs.
It's the fellowship, absolutely.
Yeah. So listen, Bruce, before we get to this subject, which is really going to be an interesting one about marketing boards and supply management and all that stuff, tell me, I was looking at your CV. Were you born in Manitoba?
I was. My roots are in western Manitoba. Grew up in a small agricultural community north of Brandon.
North of Brandon. Called?
Minnedosa.
Oh, Minnedosa.
You bet.
Wasn't that used by somebody as a name for one in her books? What was her name? Minnedosa. Anyway, I've heard it. As a matter of fact, I just went by Brandon. I think I probably saw the signs for Minnedosa.
You bet.
So, but you went to university in Manitoba, and agriculture was going to be was your career.
It. I spent pretty much 40 years, a little over 40 years, actually, in the agri-food sector, Steve.
Agri-food, yeah. Okay, well, yeah. You were in veterinary pharmaceutical.
I was. I spent the first 13 years of my career. I worked for two different companies across, I lived in four different provinces and worked nationally and internationally a little bit.
Boy. Yeah, it looks like you've got a long list here. I believe you were in eggs at some point here. You were.
I was. After my years in the pharmaceutical sector, I spent 10 years in the feed milling business, and then after that, I bought a egg grading station or packing station in Kelowna. So I graded the majority of the commercial eggs in the central interior, I guess, from the border over to Kamloops and up through this trading area.
Okay, and. We'll get to that in a moment. Yeah, eggs is another part of this marketing board system.
It is.
Supply management, is it not?
It is. Yeah. It surely is.
Okay, so let's, before I even get into any specific questions, let's try and define what is supply management, please.
Supply management, in simplest terms, is a three-pronged system to provide stability to those farm sectors that are controlled by a marketing board or that are under a marketing board. Those three underpinnings, if you like, are order control, which they have, production control, and price control.
So, okay, border control would be using tariffs.
Correct.
Production control would be using quotas.
Exactly.
And what was the other one?
The third one is price control. So each of the commodity groups has a cost of production formula, and based on that, the farmer is given a set price for his given commodity for a hectoliter of milk or a kilo of chicken or a dozen eggs or a kilo of turkey.
Okay. So what sparked the idea of marketing boards? Supply management.
Well, we chatted a little bit prior to coming on here, Steve. I had thought the infancy of the dairy sector went back into the 50s, but I was corrected that the real roots of it go back into the 30s, I believe, Bev. And so consequently, the system as it exists today was not nearly as well defined back then as it is now. And the other four sectors, that being broilers, turkeys, hatching eggs, and table eggs, for the most part, they evolved since the late 60s and early 70s.
And they've been around for quite a while,
like
50 years, a good 50 years. Mm-hmm. And the marketing or the dairy goes back to the 1930s. Well, it's sort of like wheat. I know that we don't have the wheat board anymore, but that whole idea, didn't that go back into the 30s
or earlier? I know less about the Canadian Wheat Board, although it didn't enjoy all of the same benefits that the supply management groups do, simply because they were working around an export system for a large part.
Yeah, which was the wheat board's raison d'être was to properly market
right.
and have the clout to market a large amount.
On behalf of the farmers.
On behalf of all the farmers.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's not there anymore. Anyway, okay, so now we've defined it, and we know that it comes from a number of years ago. So let's get right into it. Why would Canada stick with this marketing board system? Is it, and why wouldn't, let's say the United States, they don't have any kind of marketing boards, do they?
They do not. In terms of the reason why, I guess in order to provide or to preserve our food producing system in those five sectors, that would be the first argument. The hard reality is competing with the U.S. sector, particularly, and we'll get later, I'm sure, into the U.S. Farm Bill, but the ability for a lot of those sectors to compete at all would be very difficult.
Yeah. Yes, to compete with the Americans. So in other words, to try and level the playing field, we form these cooperatives or marketing boards try to keep our production so that our farmers can continue to at least, I know we don't, do we export that much food?
We do some export. It's a minimal amount in those five sectors.
Again. Oh, okay.
But no, it's not a huge part of their business model.
So really, mainly it's the domestic market.
That's correct.
Let me ask you, as someone who's spent his whole career in agriculture and related that all those industries, do you think it's important for a nation such as Canada to have a robust and healthy agricultural community?
Obviously, I come from some bias. I was around those sectors. I've never owned a stitch of quota on my own, but I obviously have had a lot of old customers and friends who have been in that business. In my mind, there's no question that if food sovereignty, if you want to use that term, is important at all, then we should have some mechanism to ensure that it stays in place.
Yeah. I just want to recount one tiny little incident that I'm not sure if you remember it. In 2002, I think it was, in Cancun, Mexico, the WTO was having its hearings, I think.
The GATT talks.
Yeah, the GATT talks. And that was what they call the Doha round, I think. It was still ongoing.
Yes.
2002. And there was a farmer from Korea who committed suicide on the security fence. And his little sign said, "The WTO kills farmers." It took me a long, yeah, I mean, of course, it took everybody by surprise. And why would he commit suicide? I mean, you know, but he used the word kills farmers. So the explanation, and I want to check on this with you and see if there's any validity or any truth to it. What I heard or what I read somewhere was that the United States, because of its farm bills, it can the rice producers in the States can produce rice and export it to Korea cheaper than the Korean farmers can produce it.
Let me just lead right into the U.S. farm bill, Steve.
Go ahead.
Because that's at the very core of the matter here,
so
pun intended. The U.S. subsidy that was, the U.S. Farm Bill that was passed last year in the United States, a five-year program, amounted to $478 billion. That's a big B, dollars. So that amounts to over $95 billion per annum. Now, that covers a whole host of different commodities, everything from rice to tobacco to apple production nearby us, cow-calf operations, dairy, certainly. It covers things within the end user, the food stamp program in the U.S. actually falls under that as well. But it is, you know, just based on that massive economic machine in the United States, they're able to throw that much into agriculture on an annual basis. Again, that figure of $95 billion a year. That's not something we really want to compete with.
So it looks like, it sounds like, from what you're telling me, that farmer in Korea had a point.
Very clearly.
And that the trouble is that those little farmers over there, that's their livelihood, of course, here as well. But in their, those countries, if they don't have their livelihood, then they lose, well, of course, their honor, but then they have to go to the cities to try and find work. It's quite a well. Sure. You've just confirmed what I read about it, and you also confirmed the question about food sovereignty. There's a lot of talk about food sovereignty, local food sovereignty now.
Very much.
Where the local Shuswap Food Action Co-op wants to get into that. Okay, right. But anyway, we're getting off topic here a little bit because we want to talk about. Let's talk first of all. We'll try and both of us try and justify maybe that the disadvantage or those who are opposed. But let's talk about some of the advantages of supply management.
It's probably best, Steve, for me to recap. A position that's taken by most Canadian politicians when they are in power, because there have been many hard-nosed free traders who have gone to their first stint in Ottawa and got down there, and after getting the appropriate amount of message from the farm lobby community, certainly, and a lot of other people, they kind of turned their position around pretty quickly. The first argument probably is that in Canada there are no bailouts, so there's no subsidy programs within any of those five sectors. So in other words, the farmer, while he's guaranteed a set return on his investment, he doesn't at any time, he's never able to capitalize if all of a sudden the demand exceeds the supply a great deal on a worldwide basis. He still is committed to that stable farm income level.
No bailouts. Bruce, I just want you to remind me, just for my own edification here, those five sectors you talked about. So there's milk, of course.
Yes.
And all the products that...
Broiler chickens. Table eggs.
Hatching eggs.
And turkey producers.
And turkey producers.
You bet. So, yeah. Steve, can I just jump back in on that, on your last question with regard to why it would be a good thing to hang on to these boards and the system that exists. The point of food sovereignty, again, is really critical. And even on a local basis here on the Buy Local program, I would think that we have still a growing sector of small farm cooperatives who are marketing produce and a variety of other products. A number of those people are also into the areas that are where they have an exemption under these boards and are able to produce in small numbers. Well, in the absence of the boards, if we ended up with pricing similar to what exists in the U.S., those prices would fall very dramatically, and it would pretty much circumvent their ability to produce and get any return on what they were doing on a small scale.
So, yeah. In other words, the little guy gets shut out pretty quickly.
Very quickly, yeah. When you're competing with broiler chicken operations that are growing out, the number sounds staggering, but 40 or 50 million birds a week even. Oh. It's pretty hard for Joe chicken grower who's growing out 100 chickens every 7 weeks to compete with that.
Yeah, Bev, you wanted to add something to that.
I just want to ask a question. Sure. If we didn't have the marketing boards and we had free trade only, would the quality of our food be as high as it is now? Would we have the control over the quality of food that is imported? And along with that, if it was open market and that, we would have a lot of foreign investment in our farms, so to say, and with the quality and the way that we like our food would change? Is that an understanding?
I don't know that I can say absolutely that it would change, Bev. I can indicate very clearly that would fall on the Canadian Food Inspection Agency, who are mandated with the safety aspect of food production in the country. So they would implement some form of safety and testing program on product that's imported, as they do now, I expect, on non-protected commodities that flow into the country.
And a lot of foreign countries treat their animals much differently than what we do.
They do.
And so I could see maybe a lot of problems with that, too.
Well, one of them, very quickly, sorry, Bev, the growth hormone. They use it in the States, do they not?
They do in certain sectors. And as you, Steve, you and I are about the same age. If you go back over 40 years of trade battles with the U.S. In the food sector and non-protected commodity areas, the hormone usage thing has been huge. You will recall Eugene Whalen, one of the great champions of supply management agriculture, did in fact implement a program around the feeding of, I believe it was diethylstilbestrol in beef cattle back in the 70s to limit the amount of American beef or eliminate the amount of American beef at that time that was moving across the country.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot to be said for the question of quality. I agree with you, Bruce, that it's a difficult one to measure, Bev. Very difficult. I don't know. I mean, I could ask the question, do Canadian farmers have a vested interest in making sure that the quality of their product maintains very high?
Absolutely they do.
I would think they do. Yeah. Whereas there are those who argue, I personally will not buy any food produced in China. That's just my own personal, simply because they seem to, in some areas, now, I mean, supposedly there are inspections, but in some areas where, you know, we got into quite a number of them, there was toys and, you know, different paints that, even dog food was one, where their quality control didn't seem to be very good.
The Canadian system, and again, my comments are related to the five commodity sectors protected by the boards. They all have a variety of food safe and farm safety programs that go a long way to ensuring farm safety or food safety. That coupled with CFIA and their regulations, all of the packing plants are very tightly controlled and regulated, so the system works well.
Bev, did you have a follow-up question to that? You also talked about foreign ownership, I think.
Yes, if with free trade or if we didn't have these boards, would we have a lot more foreign ownership of our farms? We would lose control over...
I would expect that there would be huge consolidation would take place, and there is some U.S. involvement in Canadian, not so much at the farm gate, but certainly in the Canadian agri-food sector, there is some foreign investment now. If we saw a complete dismantling of the system, which, for what it's worth, I don't think we will, there would be a huge rationalization, and I expect some farms may disappear in the face of something like that.
It's a difficult thing to put your finger on. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think we've lost a lot of our small family farms to the industrial farms, and that seems to be a shame right there. And I think we're going to lose a lot of control by having just big industries running our farms, whether it's beef, produce, whatever. I think that's...
Farm consolidation or increased size is inevitable because one shouldn't assume that the Canadian farmer under these boards is not competing, because very much they are. And their ability to produce up to the level that their COP allows means, for the most part, that they keep consolidating. They have become more and more efficient through improved genetics, improved nutrition. Management systems are staggering now. The climate control in poultry barns, the overall, the dairy system is just amazing. And the productivity has reflected it. It's, you know, all of these advancements don't force the animals to grow quicker or produce more. It just allows them to produce up to their genetic potential.
What about exporting? Why would we not export more milk? I know it's our prices are...
The world price on most commodities tends to be a bit of a dumping ground. And we could do that. I mean, we do it in the wheat business, the canola business, barley, a lot of... farm-based commodities, even corn, oddly enough, in some areas, moves outside of the country.
But we're getting off topic, if you don't mind, Bev. I want to get him back on topic here, because all I gave him time for was one good advantage of the marketing boards. He said no bailout. So in fact, what you're saying is the Canadian government does not subsidize the agricultural industry.
They do not. In any of those five sectors, the farmers recoup, again, their cost of production. They make a reasonable return on their investment. And that investment, for what it's worth, is substantial in the farming business. I could probably segue from that, Steve, into a little discussion on quota, because it's an area that is frequently attacked in under Canadian supply management. The price of quota, because it's stable and you have a guaranteed income, brings with it a value. And the value of that quota over the years has continued to rise. People who are critical of that, I guess my defense of the system, or my best analogy, I guess, first I should say that it's not the farmers that set the price of quota. Quota values are, for the most part, established by bankers and accountants based on the net return that a farmer gets off of his farming operation. That return, at first glance, may seem to be horrendously high, but if you look at a lot of farm operations, it's a $4 to $5 million operation. So you can compare that to a fast food franchise or a car dealership or any one of 100 different businesses in this country, and they all have a goodwill value. Quota value is essentially a goodwill value.
Okay, but what it is you're allowed to produce so much. So what happens with the marketing board system or the supply management when somebody overproduces? Take milk, for example.
They're penalized.
Yeah.
They are paid a lesser price for their surplus.
Well, what a lot of people ask me is why don't, my own father-in-law was a dairy farmer in Quebec, a very small one. He was tiny. I think he was milking 25 or 30, that's all. He once told me, he said, I had to dump some milk because he doesn't find out until... The tank truck comes and they take the milk. Like, he doesn't know. He's just producing whatever, and he's putting it in a bulk tank, and then the truck comes. But anyway, he said, I had to dump some milk. And, of course, what people always ask me is, well, why don't we give it to the poor countries? Why do we dump this good food?
What era was that, Steve?
Well, that was that would have been in the 1980s.
Yeah, I would suggest the system has changed since that time. So
very little dump.
If he did it on an ongoing basis, he would be penalized in a major way. I don't have all of the rules and regulations for the Quebec dairy industry here, but essentially his net return on that surplus milk would be on the negative side.
So for overproducing, they get dinged. They get penalized. Yeah. So you went right into the quota and the quota system. So the quota system doesn't just apply to milk; it applies to birds.
All of those other sectors: broilers, laying hens, turkeys, and hatching eggs.
And hatching eggs too. How do they? Is it natural fertilization, or do they fertilize themselves using a?
No, they have roosters in the barn.
And they work hard.
They're very busy.
Busy roosters.
I actually chaired the Hatching Egg Commission for a number of years just before I retired. So
yeah.
I know that area, I hate to say intimately.
Be careful. Yeah, be careful. But we did start out with talking about the advantages. You talked about no bailouts. I think you touched on food sovereignty.
Very much, yeah. Sustaining the smaller producer, I guess, for lack of a better term. Smaller now, these days, probably means a guy milking 80 or 90 or 100 cows, but compared to a massive operation in California milking 10,000 heads, a guy with 100 cows is a small guy. You don't have the economy of scale that those massive operations do. I think beyond that, I've got to go back to the quota thing, because in worst case scenario, in my mind, where the Canadian government said, that's it, we're going to scrap supply management. Well, there are billions of dollars in quota value in this country. So if the government of the day, whoever that might be, had any conscience, they're going to have to find some way to allow that producer, because a lot of that quota is financed under the Canadian banking system, and I don't think they're just going to pull the plug and let it go. So either they're going to have to step it down, or they're going to have to come up with a program where they pay those farmers out for the quota value.
Exactly.
And again, if this was the U.S. with the U.S. Farm Bill, maybe it'd be easy. But our Canadian economy, at the end of the day, just isn't that big or that vibrant that that we can write those big checks.
No. So that, even though they talk a lot about these threats of getting rid of the marketing boards, it's really not realistic.
I don't think it is. And there's another whole different equation about, and it falls under a constitutional fight, because even the boards are allowed under a federal system, they are all provincial boards. So you get into federal-provincial relations in terms of how you would address those things. So you're going to open Pandora's box in a huge way by the time you try to resolve the thing.
I saw that in some of the stuff I was reading about the constitutional. We're into some constitutions. And just before we go on, I just want to promote, make sure that you tell all your friends, by the way, out of province or around here, about Roots and Blues coming up August 14th to the 16th. And there's some really neat people coming, like Marty Stewart and his fabulous Superlatives, and John Oakes and his band. So you just tell your friends. And Bruce, you had a few more points about some of the advantages of this wonderful food system that we have.
Well, I'm certainly well aware of the fact that most of the criticism falls around cheap food, Steve. I think it's human nature. Everybody wants the best, and they want it at the cheapest price. And we all know about people living along the U.S. border and their ability to sneak across and buy meat, milk, and eggs at reduced prices. The retailers along the U.S. border are not beyond loss leadering that stuff as well, because, of course, once you're in the store, then you will buy other goods as well. But it's been a real sore spot in everywhere from Windsor, Ontario, certainly the lower mainland of British Columbia, anywhere where you're within a 20-minute or a half-an-hour drive.
And the other factor, of course, when the dollar was a little more, there was more parity.
You bet.
Now you don't hear so much about it because it's not worth it anymore.
Absolutely. So.
Yeah. One other thing that I want to... One of our listeners has sent me an email here talking about, local markets are gaining in popularity, and he's arguing we should get rid of the marketing boards and have everything local. Hmm. But isn't that sort of a bit of a contradiction? Because if you get rid of the marketing boards, you're going to have a consolidation and you're going to have more imported food, would you not?
You would, and I would suggest that all of those commodities that those local farmers are producing would be available through local grocery stores at a substantially lesser price, because the food retailing business is highly competitive.
Yeah.
If every retailer had the opportunity to buy through brokers out of Minneapolis, Chicago, and New York, I guarantee you that the laid-in price for meat, milk, and eggs under the systems would be substantially less.
Yeah. But we protect our farmers for the reasons that you've just finished.
So yeah, I would argue that those small producers do very well as a result of the board system, simply because that higher price and stable price that is out there allows them to produce and make a living.
Make a living. So could you say that there's probably per capita, if we will, it's hard to make comparisons with the states because we're just so different. They're like 10 times our economy. But would you say that the smaller farmers in Canada are better protected with a supply management system?
No question in my mind. Yeah. I would argue that day and night.
Okay, and one of the reasons for that is that they are, because of they're guaranteed a price, a reasonable price for their product, and it's geared to the cost of production.
The COP. The commercial producers are, and the smaller producers price their commodity in and around that same level.
And they can compete.
In the absence of marketing boards, my argument is that price would be a lot lower. So
the little guys,
somebody with 100 laying hens might be facing the prospect of selling their eggs for $1.25 a dozen. And believe me, at $1.25 a dozen, they won't stay at it very long.
A couple of weeks. So, you know, we get we dealt with this argument about wasting food, and now you're suggesting that there's very little waste.
I'm telling you, there is very little waste in those sectors. Virtually all the disincentives to produce too much are that great in all of the sectors that people can't afford to produce any more than what their quota allows them to.
Yeah, so it's rather refined. One of the let's jump right into those people that argue, hey, wait a minute, this is a free market system. We shouldn't have these marketing boards. We should just have the free market, and the price will go down.
Very clearly, that is the ultimate argument. And if people are looking solely at the price of food, then they're absolutely correct. The hard reality is for us in certainly those five key commodity sectors that I'm addressing would have great difficulty competing with primarily U.S. product rolling in because we don't have the equivalent of the U.S. Farm Bill. I should go back to Canadian politicians a little bit, and why they tend to like it is because they don't have to dip in for a subsidy program as they have over the years in the beef sector, or more specifically in the hog sector, which has had on about a 8-year cycle, that thing just turns into an awful mess, and they're having to bail people out to a large extent.
So you don't carry on.
I was going to segue into something else here.
Go ahead, please do.
One of the I touched earlier on Eugene Whalen, who was a great champion of supply management, a member of Parliament, a Liberal member from, I think, Essex County down near Windsor. The years that I was in supply management, or in the sector supply business, in the feed milling business in particular, I heard Mr. Whalen speak a number of times on the merits of supply management, and like every politician, he did his homework very well when he got up in front of a particular group of people. And I remember being at a national feed industry conference in Edmonton, and he showed up with his green Stetson on and started into this thing, knowing that some people in that sector were pretty vehemently opposed to supply management because it limited their ability to market their commodity market feed into a sector that could grow freely. But Mr. Whalen's strongest argument was the fact that he said, I want every one of you guys to dig out your list of accounts receivable and go back over the last 10 years and tell me how many insolvencies or bankruptcies or bad checks that you've had out of supply management agriculture. And then I want to run a parallel list of people in the beef industry and
I see where you're going with
and the hog industry and everything else from every other animal sector. And he was absolutely right. You know, there have been the number of insolvencies I expect across the country have been a handful most years. Some people just, you know, because they've chosen not to expand over time may have trouble. I'm not sure they went bankrupt, but they probably folded the tent and went away. But other than I've known some farmers who have got off into other investment ventures and that's forced them to disperse their farm assets because of losses in other areas. But it's a very stable business. It is, you know, the hardcore opponents refer to it as a monopoly, or maybe a better term would be oligopoly, because you are able to control your destiny to a large extent. But on the other hand, we are a country of oligopolies, and you know, we don't need to talk about the national banking system here, but very clearly, you know, their system, we have a strong banking system in Canada, but a part of that is because of the amount of control that's on them.
Yes, yeah. I just wanted to reiterate something that you, well, first of all, a couple of things. One, you talked, and I just want to clarify it, because you basically said because of the stability of the supply management marketing system, there are very few within that system, very few bankruptcies, etc. Whereas in beef, pork, there's continuous growth and growth size of those. Like, I know they had some problems in Quebec with pork. But there's lots of bankruptcies, and that was Eugene Whelan's argument, was stability.
Very much so. And it's just not the feed milling sector. It's equipment suppliers, it's local hardware stores or lumber suppliers. All of these sectors, if you look around, particularly in rural communities, they support a lot of other business. They really do. They're not huge employers of people. But if you talk to electricians, dairy supply companies, genetics companies, people in the dairy genetics business, in a big way, all of them provide goods and services to, you know, on a local basis to a lot of these farms.
To the
building contractors.
So the spin-offs are enormous.
The spin-off is massive. If you look in and around this community or the North Okanagan generally, North Okanagan Shuswap, I should have researched the number of new dairy and poultry barns that have gone up, but I expect it would be 30 to 40 barns in the last 5 to 6 years.
Wow, so that's quite a bit in this small area.
So for building contractors, for lumber supply,
all those things in the economy.
You bet.
So why then would, and now I want to go back to the U.S. Farm Bill, because here we are, and we hear on the news a little bit about the TPP, Bev was talking about, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, and how the Americans and the Europeans are trying, the Europeans aren't involved in this one. The Americans especially are trying to put pressure on us to do away with, especially the import duties on all those five sectors. And they're trying. And I very seldom, I have not yet heard anybody talk about the U.S. Farm Bill. And here they are, the Americans seem to be talking out of both sides of their mouth at the same time.
Steve, we sit in the middle of the forest in this town, and we all know about softwood lumber. This thing is very much similar to that kind of program when you get into negotiating with the American industry or American governments. Subsidies, I've heard American negotiators say many times that, well, that's not a subsidy, that's the U.S. Farm Bill. That has totally to do with U.S. consumption or domestic consumption of goods and so forth. But as we well know, we are sleeping next to the elephant. And in areas like this where you get massive vertical integration in the U.S., I would dare say a lot of those sectors would, they may not disappear totally off the face of the earth, but they would shrink down considerably.
Yeah. Bruce, it seems to me there was a lot of negotiations about what is a subsidy.
I don't know that. Those things are all, you know, in the midst of these negotiations, most of those things come out and are on the table. So there is, sometimes you have to dig for it, but generally there's transparency on things. Again, American negotiators will be contrarians in terms of what's a subsidy and what's just a part of an ongoing domestic program. But the hard reality is all of that will spill over into, you know, the eventual wholesale price that food hits the marketplace at.
Yeah. It's interesting. When I was researching this, and I don't know where I saw this. I saw it somewhere. I don't have it in my notes, but You know, Canadians, of course, when they hear that we could get, well, you already talked about it, people running across the border, and why can't we get cheaper? Well, first of all, I've got a question for you. Are the amount of our, the average percentage of our income that we pay for food, what is it in Canada? Is it up to 12%? Of our gross income?
I'm sorry, I can't answer that.
No, but apparently
probably
it is.
Probably higher than that.
You think it's higher?
It is higher.
Is it? What is it?
I don't know. Last I checked, it was a little over 15%.
15%?
Yeah, but I've got an interesting piece of thing. If we had free trade, the difference it would make to the average family per year would be just $200 if we had free trade. That's all that, or if we had free trade and we didn't have the marketing boards.
It would mean everybody has $200 more?
That's it. So it's not, yeah, per person. No, it says per family per year is what this one says.
Yeah, but I don't know. I don't know how that shakes out. All I know is that when Bruce talked about the stability, the guaranteed income of these farmers, and then you consider the spin-offs of all the industries that supply all these farmers. Agriculture has a very important, I don't know what percentage of our gross domestic product it is, but it's huge.
But it only costs the average family $200 a year in our food bill to subsidize, or not subsidize, that's the wrong word.
Oh, I see.
Is to support the marketing
board.
So that, I mean, you figure that out. That's what's $200 going to do for you?
That's right. It's pittance. It's a pittance
compared. I mean, for some families, it isn't.
Yeah. One of the arguments that I heard to maintain it was, and that's why I asked Bruce, it's up to 15% now. At one time, I remember it was 11 or 12%. But at any rate, 15% of our gross income goes for food. In many countries, I don't know about Europe, but in many countries, that percentage is way up around 20 or 30% goes for food. So we're already getting quite cheap food, really, when you consider it.
In relative terms, I would argue that we are. You know, again, when your border runs along the U.S., you know, everybody looks over the border and sees what's there. And there is a mindset of cheap food. It's basically ingrained in the American psyche. Everybody wants food cheap. And if you go most other areas in the world, food is substantially more expensive than it is in the U.S., certainly. As you say, in Europe, it very much is.
In the Orient, it is, too.
Pardon me?
In the Orient, the price of it, very, very high.
Yeah, so really in this latest negotiations then on the TPP, they don't really want to negotiate away the marketing board system.
Well, the farmers certainly don't.
No.
And I would argue that a lot of the sectors that surround the boards probably would not, because it would see the demise or certainly a lessening of the viability of their businesses. So, you know, we're probably a voice in the wilderness by talking in support of this thing, because the majority of people just see cheaper. And again, it's human nature for us to want to buy cheaper, better and cheaper if we possibly can.
Well, then I guess it takes more people, including our politicians, if we give them a chance or encourage them to continue to remind us all, as Bev just said, okay, it's going to cost you an extra $200 a year, but we're going to keep our country, one, we're going to be food sovereign. We will have our own production, which is, go ahead.
And just to that point, Steve, I think there is, on a worldwide basis, this food sovereignty thing, there is a concern of the people and of governments everywhere that food would ever be used as a political weapon. It's a fundamental underpinning, a core belief that people have. And if this thing, you know, again, if you just pull the string and unraveled our entire system, there would be more than consolidation. It would be a train wreck of the first order, unless the government had some kind of a step-out program for farmers to allow them to ease their way out.
Do you think maybe one of the things that will happen is they'll reduce some of the import quotas or reduce the cost of it? Like,
that's all about political will, and the National Farm Products Marketing Council that oversees the the day-to-day behavior of all of the boards.
Mm-hmm.
And most of these boards are made up of farmers themselves?
Boards generally are, although in my case, because I had, after I divested of my interest in the feed and then the egg sector, all of the boards in this province have an independent chair. So I sat at different times on the egg marketing board and then the hatching egg commission for, I guess, 5 or 6 years in total. So it's not all about the fox guarding the hen house. The farmers are obligated under their board to play within a particular set of rules. So it's not all gravy, believe me. And they don't like getting whacked by their own system, but every once in a while they do if they step out of line on issues related to quality or overproduction.
We've completely run out of time. We got less than a minute to go. I want to thank you very much, Bruce, for coming. I think we touched on it. I think there was a lot of important points that came out. Thank you very much for coming.
Thanks for the opportunity, Steve. I enjoyed it.
It's very an interesting subject, very important. Bev, thank you for your input.
You're welcome.
And please stay tuned for the listeners. Stay tuned for you're listening on Tuesday evening, for the events calendar coming right up at 6 o'clock. Thank you and good evening.
Just sitting on Fernwood Street, laid back just shooting.